Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Advertising Corporation and the law offices of Matthew Simone. The views and opinions expressed are solely those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent KCBQ or its sponsors. It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you feel that atheists are undergoing a great deal of persecution in this country. Actually, I meet many atheists who honestly believe this, but sincere as they may be, the fear is simply not justified. At least it's not true in any general, substantial way. I have no idea what some tiny little town in the Smoky Mountains might do, but in our major universities, it is Christians who are being persecuted. The philosophies of atheism and humanism are doing just fine. As an example, I'm going to replay an interview I did with a Washington Times correspondent last week when I substitute hosted for Rick Amato's national program, Inside the Story. Let's listen in. Hello, this is Bob Siegel once again filling in for Rick Amato. Always an honor to be here. Rachel Duke is a national reporter intern for the Washington Times. If you've never heard of the Alliance Defense Fund, they're kind of a Christian answer to the ACLU. We could probably say that the ACLU made them what they were, not intentionally. But attorneys with the Alliance Defense Fund have sued Augusta State University in Georgia on behalf of a counseling student who claims the university told her to deny her Christian beliefs in order to graduate. I wish I could say these kinds of stories surprise me. Actually, nothing surprises me anymore. But Rachel Duke, welcome to our program.
Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure to meet you. What's going on out at Augusta State?
Well, right now a lawsuit is pending between Augusta State University and Jennifer Keaton, or I guess the Alliance Defense Fund is doing it for her. But she is pursuing, she's 24, pursuing a master's degree in counseling, and she was ordered to undergo a re-education plan that required her to attend diversity sensitivity training and complete additional remedial reading and write papers and how they affected her beliefs. And basically they were saying that she was prejudiced and intolerant of...
I'm going to take a wild guess to say that that's all code for the subject of homosexuality.
It is.
Yeah.
Yes,
that's what I thought. I can't imagine that they'd ever come out in so many words and say, we have a problem with you being a Christian. In fact, they'd probably say that Jesus was a more sensitive Christian, and he was all for gay marriage. That's what I mean.
Well, and in fact, some people do interpret it that way.
Oh, many churches interpret it that way.
And part of it is that they said that, well, she asked them, well, how am I any different? How should I be viewed any different than a Buddhist or a Muslim? And they said, well, Christians see this population as sinners. And she said, well, in fact, that she herself is a sinner and everyone else is a sinner, and she would have no problem standing up and telling anyone that she was a sinner, and she did not discriminate and did not have any sort of prejudice against them, but she cannot condone what they did, but she didn't hate them in any sort of way.
Yeah, unfortunately, the definition of the word hate has changed in epidemic proportions.
Yes, and she also asked them how this would even affect her competence as a counselor, and especially if she did not have to counsel these people. And legally, you can deny a client, I guess professionally as well. If a client comes to you, you can say, well, I don't think I am the best suited to fit your case, and here's this person. Let me get you in touch with them. And in fact, that did happen in another case. it was very similar to this one with Julia Ward from Eastern Michigan University, who was also dismissed from the program. And these lawsuits, there have been several, and none so far have been successful. This is actually becoming more of a trend more and more in public universities. And when she was asked to ask why she did not go to a Christian university to get her master's in counseling, she said, well, they don't accept ACU credits, and it just costs more money, and I want to save my money.
Yeah, and of course, you know, not only can a counselor deny a client, but a client can deny a counselor too. Certainly if a client went to a counselor who was a self-professed evangelical Christian, they would understand ahead of time what their view was on certain issues, and they could go to somebody else.
Exactly. Well, and talking with the faculty in a private meeting, one of the faculty members held up both her hands to kind of signify a scale and said, well, you can either choose the ACA code of ethics or you can choose the Bible. Which one is up to you?
And now, for a Christian, that shouldn't be much of a choice to think about.
No, it should not be. And she definitely made a stand for her belief. She said, while I want to stay in the counseling program, I know that I can't honestly complete the remediation plan knowing that I would have to alter my beliefs. I am not willing to, and I know I can't change my biblical views. So she definitely is not willing to go through with that sort of plan. She's definitely fighting against it.
Well, good for her. Now, you mentioned that there have been other such cases, and none of them have been successful, meaning that the challengers, the Alliance Defense Fund, have not been successful.
Exactly.
And I guess that's just the state of activist judges that we have today who try to legislate from the bench rather than actually reading what the Constitution says.
Yes.
So they've been unsuccessful the previous cases. What is the status of this one? Does this look like it's going to go the same direction, or have there been any different kinds of developments, any glimmers of hope in terms of publicity that it's generated, anything like that?
I could not say definitely. I do not know the answer to that question. I do know that David French, who is the main lawyer on the case, said that, you know, this is very unconstitutional, and it's hard to conceive of a more blatant violation of her right to freedom of speech and her freedom of conscience. And he said that they're definitely fighting against and for Jennifer Keaton's case, and they hope it will be successful. They're definitely, I mean, I know that he was very hopeful in that regard, and that they're going to continue fighting no matter what, because it, you know, he said it's better to fight than just to let this continue on happening in these universities.
But it sounds like the school isn't really denying any of her claims. It sounds like they're just relishing in their position, reveling in their position.
They are. It's very interesting. I tried to get in contact with them over a two-day period, and I was really pushing hard, especially in the PR department, but those are, you know, very hard to get in touch with someone and get a straight answer out of anyone. And they told me that basically we can't say that much on the case and it's still pending, we cannot, you know, we don't, you know, discriminate on anyone based on their moral beliefs or, you know, anything like that. And yet at the same time they're saying, oh, you have to deny your moral beliefs in order to graduate this program. And I thought that was a very sort of contradictory statement, and I let it speak for itself in the article.
Well, you know, it's not just moral. People have to actually deny medical and scientific beliefs. A lot of people don't realize that in 1973, the APA declassified homosexuality as an emotional disorder only because of political pressure.
Yeah.
There was a vote taken. Two-thirds of the ballots were never even turned back in. Dr. Charles Socorides, who was there at the time, said this was the greatest medical hoax ever perpetrated against our country. And there are people who are gay who go to counselors in the hopes of overcoming their homosexual tendencies. But they've pushed to, and I think they'll succeed in this someday, they pushed to make it illegal for any counselor to help a homosexual, even if the homosexual is asking for such help.
I have not heard about that. Wow.
Yeah, it's interesting stuff. Have you been following any other cases that the Alliance Defense Fund has pending right now, Rachel?
I have not been. I definitely plan on following this case as much as possible. and hope to stay in touch with David French to do a follow-up story on this, because I do think it's worth following.
Changing the subject just a little bit, but it's related in the sense that it's also about Christianity. Do you know if the Washington Times is following the story over in Dearborn, Michigan, about the four Christian evangelists who were arrested for sharing the gospel with Muslims?
I have not heard of that story.
Oh, it's all over the internet. I have not heard as much about it in the media, but it is all over the internet. So you might find that an interesting one to look into, because it's really taken on a life of its own.
Yes, I will definitely look that up.
Okay. Well, we're down to our last few minutes. Any more comments on this story?
I would have to say that I don't have that many more comments on the story, since it does speak for itself. It's definitely a very intense, intriguing story that often kind of gets tucked under the rug in a way, in a sense, and in the shadows. And it's something that needs to, I think it's important in our day, especially fighting for the Constitution and various things. Just Jennifer Keaton's story, it was very sad to hear that this sort of thing is happening, and that, you know, they are saying that she has no tolerance for homosexuality or for homosexuals, and yet they're having zero tolerance for her convictions and beliefs.
That's exactly the point. It seems like the people who talk about tolerance the most show themselves to be incredibly intolerant at times.
Yes, I agree.
And in Canada right now, it is against the law to speak against homosexuality. There are people that would like to make that against the law. In the United States, there was a pastor in Sweden, or it might have been Denmark, but one of the Scandinavian countries, who was arrested. Now, the people that arrested him lost that case, but that's pretty harrowing that such a thing even happened. It seems like this is less and less about the lifestyle of homosexuality and more about our constitutional right to freedom of speech.
Well, and I think it's sad the fact that she wasn't even found guilty of malpractice, number one, because she hasn't even, began counseling anyone. She's still in school. I doubt she's doing a practicum course.
How did it even come to their attention that they should be concerned about her?
I tried to find that out. That's why I called the university, and there was not much on that, and David French himself, in fact, did not know much about that.
Because it sounds like she's not really flaunting that, so I'd be curious to know how that even came to their attention.
Yeah, and I think it's just various professors that really brought it to their attention. As you know, she said that she would share her convictions in class in an appropriate manner, not in an obnoxious sort of way, an arrogant way, but during class assignments or in papers she had to turn in, or in discussions with students outside and inside of class. And not only are they trying to control what she does inside of the classroom, but outside the classroom.
And we invite you to share your convictions unless we disagree with your convictions.
Exactly.
Listen, Rachel, you're wonderful. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us on the program.
Well, thank you for having me.
Okay, take care. Well, that was from the program Inside the Story, a Washington Times radio show that I was honored to guest host. But right now you're listening to The Bob Siegel Show. Our theme, Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture. Politics and pop culture merged together when President Obama made an appearance on that prestigious journalistic program, ABC's The View. The most interesting question, in my opinion, came from Joy Behar.
I mean, you signed 200-plus laws into being since you're in office. You have financial reform has taken place. You got a health care. I mean, you've put two women on the Supreme Court. I could go on and on about your accomplishments. And yet the right wing, through Fox News and other outlets, they seem to be hijacking the narrative. Where on your side is the narrative? Where is your attack dog to come out and tell the American people, listen, this is what we did.
Joy, that's your job.
What?
So, conservatives are writing the narrative. I guess Joy must have forgotten about ABC, CBS, MSNBC, CNN, PBS, NPR, the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Boston Globe, the Los Angeles Times, Newsweek, the secular universities, the teachers' unions, the American Medical Association, the American Psychiatric Association. Oh, and that humble little town called Hollywood. Make no mistake, the problem is not that liberals don't have a narrative. The problem is that they believe they should be the only narrative. That's why they support ideas like the Fairness Doctrine. Joy, we realize you don't like Fox News, but don't rewrite history to make your point. The truth is, thanks to Fox News, thanks to talk radio, thanks to the internet, people are hearing both sides, something they were not able to obtain from the media for many, many years. Oh, and Joy, that's why Obama's approval ratings are so abysmal. People are hearing both sides. But Obama does have a new spokesman, somebody you wouldn't expect, Andy Griffith. Good old Andy. Now, I'm a big Andy Griffith fan, big fan. I loved The Andy Griffith Show. I still watch it. I own several seasons on DVD. It's a treat. The sitcom was funny, clever, and downright charming. But I must confess, it's depressing to see old Andy dragged out of the retirement home to do commercials for our current administration. With his trustworthy southern drawl, the former sheriff of Mayberry reassures senior citizens that Medicare under Obamacare is in great shape.
1965. A lot of good things came out that year, like Medicare. This year, like always, we'll have our guaranteed benefits. And with the new health care law, more good things are coming. Free checkups, lower prescription costs, and better ways to protect us and Medicare from fraud. See what else is new. I think you're going to like it.
I find it strangely ironic that the same liberal movement which belittles the innocence of traditional family values would bring back a man whose face is as recognizable as the carvings of Mount Rushmore and whose television program provided one weekly morality play after another. When Andy Taylor talked to his son Opie, the boy learned the difference between right and wrong. He also understood that as a human being, he had to take responsibility for his own actions. Other lessons included standing up to bullies, refusing to tell lies, and loving your country. If these virtues are hidden in our current government, it will take an Easter egg hunt to find them. I remember Andy Griffith advertising Ritz crackers. Remember that commercial? Good cracker. Well, somewhere, political hacks are shaking hands saying, good strategy. Let's use a slice of Americana to justify the fact that America, as they've known it, will never be the same, thanks to us. Then again, maybe Andy Griffith is the perfect spokesman for an administration that runs our country like Barney Fife and a commander-in-chief who coordinates troops like Gomer Pyle.
Surprise, surprise, surprise.
The condition of our world does make us long for a simpler time, doesn't it? A time when problems were little and solutions seemed as easy as taking a day off.
When you're alone and life is making you lonely, you can always go downtown. When you've got worries, all the noise and the hurry seems to help, I know. Downtown, just listen to the music of the traffic in the city. Linger on the sidewalk where the neon signs are pretty. How can you lose? The lights so much brighter there. You can't forget all your troubles, forget all your cares, so go downtown. Your problems surround you. There are movie shows downtown. Maybe you know some little places to go to where they never close downtown. Just listen to the rhythm of a gentle bossa nova. You'll be dancing with them too before the night is over. Happy again. The light's so much brighter there. Forget all your troubles, forget all your cares. So go downtown, where all the lights are bright. Downtown, waiting for you tonight. Downtown,
is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539, W&S Electric. Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. My next guest is James Griffiths of the Western Center for Law. Of course, anybody who lives in California and really anybody who lives in the United States of America realized that there was a land-breaking overturning of an actual state constitution that was put into law through the notorious Proposition 8. James Griffiths, welcome to our program.
It's great to be with you, Bob. Thank you.
Hey, why don't you go back and I think most people by now are familiar with Proposition 8, but I think we'd like to hear one at a time the reasonings that this judge had, because I understood it went even beyond just calling it constitutional. I know he made some outrageous statements in his opinion.
Well, he did, and what he did here was, as a federal judge, Judge Walker is looking at this issue under the United States Constitution. And so his analysis, over 136 pages of often incomprehensible prose and text and insertions of his own opinion, basically came down and said that Proposition 8, which, as you mentioned, is actually part of the California Constitution now, doesn't advance any rational basis in law, that it's totally irrational, that all it does is single out gay men and lesbians for denial of equal protection under the law, it infringes on their due process, and as a result, can't withstand federal constitutional scrutiny and strike down the portion of the California Constitution.
So, and then wasn't he also making outlandish statements trying to get into the motives and the hearts of the, and it was 7 million people, more than 7 million people that voted for Proposition 8, questioning their motives, just calling them bigoted?
Yeah, that's right. He basically just sort of put aside any argument about the First Amendment rights of those 7 million Californians who voted in favor of the law and said those views don't matter, that as a particularly discriminated against minority, gays and lesbians are entitled to particular scrutiny under any law that would potentially infringe on their rights. And as a result, those views of the 7 million Californians don't matter. We're going to protect this so-called discrete minority, the homosexual population, and strike down that law despite what Californians had to say.
So basically, this judge, in his arrogance, is saying that he knows better than 7 million people in a country that's supposed to be both a republic and a democracy.
That's right. I mean, talk about an undemocratic opinion. You've got one federal judge, an Article III judge, who's protected by life tenure, I would add, who is inserting his views and completely overruling the views and the positions held by 7 million Californians.
Well, we may as well start calling ourselves an oligarchy.
Yeah, or a dictatorship, of this judge, if nothing else. At least we have an appeals process that we can take up, but who knows how successful that will be.
The Supreme Court could do anything, because it's kind of a 50-50 split with one swing vote, and God only knows if Obama will end up putting even somebody else on the Supreme Court by the time it gets there.
Well, that's a great point about the U.S. Supreme Court. We've got four fairly reliable conservative votes, four fairly reliable, liberal votes, and then we've got Justice Kennedy in the middle. The concern is we're prognosticating now, and there is an intermediate step, by the way. We've got the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, Federal Court of Appeals, that'll hear this next. But we all know, even Judge Walker himself.
Big surprise what the Ninth Circuit's going to do.
The most overturned circuit in the country, the largest circuit in the country. We all know, sort of, we can predict how that will go. So everyone's looking forward to the U.S. Supreme Court and Justice Kennedy. And the concern there is, a couple. First, Justice Kennedy wrote the opinion upon which Judge Walker's terrible decision was partly based. That's Lawrence versus Texas, which basically struck down Texas's anti-sodomy law. That was several years ago. And the other problem is Justice Kennedy was also the swing vote in a far more recent decision, the CLS versus Martinez case, which basically says the Christian Legal Society group at the University of Hastings did not have the right to decide who would be members of its own particular club there on campus, and said they had to accept all comers, whether or not they agree with that club's mission and goals.
You're kidding me. Would they tell the militant gay activist club that if somebody wanted to come in and call themselves a Christian and say homosexuality is wrong, that they could join the club?
Well, I doubt it, but Justice Kennedy in this case certainly struck down the CLS's ability to determine its own membership, and in so doing struck a blow against religious freedom, and certainly called into question how he would handle the Prop 8 case once it gets to the U.S. Supreme Court.
It absolutely staggers the imagination. What is the main sentiment that you're hearing at your firm and when you talk to other attorneys? Are people optimistic or are they pessimistic about Kennedy for those reasons that you mentioned?
Well, the sentiment first starts with just general outrage at Judge Walker, but with respect to Justice Kennedy, it's grave concern. Like I said, the Lawrence versus Texas opinion is bad enough, but with the recent CLS just came down about 6 weeks ago, with that decision being our most recent indicia of what Justice Kennedy may do, it's cause for real concern.
Well, let's look at two scenarios. Scenario one, the Supreme Court, as a result of Justice Kennedy's swing vote, overturns this. Does that mean gay marriage is now the law of the land, or does that mean that it's just somehow California's is overturned? Because aren't there at least 16 or so, maybe, I think it's even more than 16, I think it's in the 20s, how many other states have passed the same law that California did? How would the Supreme Court upholding Judge Walker's decision affect the other states that made the same decision as California?
Yeah, it's a good question, and the implications are staggering. Basically, if the United States Supreme Court goes ahead and strikes down Article 1, Section 7.5, the same way Judge Walker did, and says that there's a federal prohibition on limiting marriage between a man and a woman, then you'll have that prohibition across the country. And my understanding was, I think there's almost 30 states. There are 30 states that have constitutional amendments protecting traditional marriage, and there are several more. 30 of them have laws against it, and several more have constitutional amendments. So we're almost 2/3 of the states have those. If the U.S. Supreme Court strikes down California's constitutional protections, it would have to then do the same to all of the others. It would basically say that you cannot have marriage between a man and a woman be the defining characteristic in the United States.
That's really something. Do you think we might just have anarchy or a revolution on our hands if that happens? This is not like overturning one state this time. He'd be overturning so many states at one time. I don't know if we've ever had a situation like that. Maybe back with Roe versus Wade. I don't remember how many states were lined up each way on that one.
Well, the parallel is apt between this and Roe versus Wade in that what you saw in Roe versus Wade was the U.S. Supreme Court stepping in and taking a political issue away from the states to determine and the people to determine and imposing their views. You've got that with Judge Walker here with Prop 8. You would have a similar circumstance with the U.S. Supreme Court. That's why I'm hopeful they wouldn't do that, and I think anarchy is a word that you used. I think I would agree with that. What you would have is a constitutional crisis, where you have 30-plus states who have taken upon themselves as states to define their constitution a certain way, and the United States Supreme Court saying they can't do that.
I'm starting to think we need an amendment in our Constitution that takes away the powers of the judge to interpret the Constitution. Although, actually, you don't read that in the Constitution anyway. That more or less started with Marbury versus Madison. But anyway, through case law, we kind of grandfather clause that custom. I think if we don't do away with that custom, it's going to be the death of us, because it doesn't matter how many tea parties we have. It doesn't matter what happens with Congress. If the president can just put in any justices he wants, that's it. The gig is up.
Well, I agree, and I think that's right. You mentioned oligarchy earlier. I mean, what we really have in a lot of these cases with the activist judges is the rule of a few. You've got these judges that are lifetime appointments on the federal side, imposing their views across the country, and this would be by far the most extreme and concerning example of that, but not outside the realm of possibility. I mean, talk about undermining the democratic process. You've got Proposition 8, there was tens of millions, I think it was $80 million total spent in 2008 from either side, regarding the Proposition 8 debate, radio ads, television ads, all kinds of media. The people had an opportunity through the democratic process and the initiative process in California to speak their mind, to represent their views, and they did so in arguably the most democratic way possible, a direct vote. And in doing so, they chose to protect marriages between a man and a woman in this state, and one federal judge has taken it upon himself to overrule that. That's the definition of anti-democracy.
Well, let's be optimistic for a moment. Let's say the Supreme Court rules and keeps Proposition 8 in place. Then what does that do? I'm imagining that the reverse would not be true, that they wouldn't suddenly make heterosexual marriage the law of the land, wouldn't that just then throw it back to the states and we'll have what we have now, each state doing it their own way?
Yeah, that's exactly right. It would restore Article 1, Section 7.5 to the California Constitution. It would allow Californians to define marriage the way they have attempted to do in their Constitution, but it wouldn't necessarily disturb the other states in their ability to do that.
That doesn't quite seem right, that if it goes one way, it becomes the law of the land. If it goes the other way, it just maintains the status quo.
Well, it's true. I mean, certainly for those who want to protect marriage, I would agree with you. The reason has to do with the principles of equal protection under the United States Constitution and the 14th Amendment. So basically, if the U.S. Supreme Court says that it is a denial of equal protection, that homosexuals are not protected equally if they're not allowed to have the term marriage for their unions, then it would, of course, have to be able to have that definition. If not, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're entitled to it or not entitled to it. It would just allow the states to then determine.
How is the Supreme Court, if they use the equal protection argument, going to then speak against polygamy? Because I don't see how, if we talk about equal protection for anybody that wants to get married in any way possible, wouldn't polygamy have to now be allowed as well?
Well, that's an interesting question, and it may, and certainly those are some of the arguments that were brought up at trial and that are often mentioned in this debate. It comes down to nuance, I think, in many respects, and it has to do with the way this was framed. The Judge Walker's decision and the Prop 8 debate itself, it had to do with whether or not homosexuals are, quote, entitled to marriage. See, a homosexual, someone who identifies himself as a homosexual, is, of course, entitled to marry in California. They're just not entitled to marry someone of the same sex, or at least they weren't under Prop 8. So it's not as though they're completely denied the opportunity to marriage. People can marry whomever they choose as long as the person they're choosing is of the opposite sex. You'd have that sort of same type of discussion with polygamy. Well, you know, they have the opportunity to marry. They can only just marry one person, or they can marry multiple people. And that argument would then be sort of taken to its logical extreme through that.
Unfortunately, it seems like one step of a much broader agenda, because making gay marriage legal, what they, like you said, they can go ahead and get married. There are gay and liberal churches that will marry them. Nobody's telling them they can't call themselves married. What they're doing is they're using the very intolerance they accuse us of. They're asking us to nationally change the definition of marriage. And I know that in Canada, and it's starting to happen in other places, laws are being put on the books that make it against the law to even speak against homosexuality. To me, that's the big thing. I mean, people have asked me, well, what difference does it make if two gay people want to get married? I just say, on its face, that doesn't make a whole lot of difference to me personally. But I think most people are unaware that this is just a very small step of a much bigger ladder.
That's right. It's certainly part of a campaign. I mean, the radical gay agenda, and not every homosexual ascribes to that viewpoint, but those who are driving this case and this litigation certainly do, the radical gay agenda is less concerned with marriage per se than they are with completely, achieving total acceptance of their lifestyle and their views in the public realm. And that goes across the board. They've achieved it in popular culture. They've achieved it in media in most respects, certainly in Hollywood. But they want it total normalization across the board, and that includes in churches and in religious viewpoints. And their goal is to achieve that either through coercion or through litigation or through just time wearing them down, and they're trying all different methods to do that. Prop 8 is another good example. One of the driving forces behind our efforts to get Prop 8 passed was to let pastors know from their pulpits that, listen, you need to try to protect marriage in this state, because if you don't, you could be forced to marry homosexuals, you could lose the opportunity, as you said, to speak out against the practice of homosexuality from the pulpit. And that finally got some pastors' attention and helped really promote the passage of Proposition 8 back in 2008.
Unless all the churches just call themselves mosques, then we can do anything we darn want, including a man beating his wife, if that was big in the news this week. James Griffiths, are you finding yourself waking up in the morning saying, I'm living on the edge of history?
Well, there's certainly an aspect of that in this. I mean, look, the kind of cases that we're seeing now with CLS versus Martinez, and certainly Judge Walker's decision of Prop 8, and some of the others that you've mentioned earlier in this program, there's a concern with seeing the post-Christian time arriving, that no longer is government sort of one nation under God as we see it in most cases, that we're really seeing a sense of the culture getting away from us. And there's a darkness that's kind of coming, and it's palpable in our offices. When we see the cases that we're getting and the cases that we're hearing about in the religious freedom area, it's eroding, and we need to stand up quickly and do something about it.
If you were a betting man, any ideas which way the Supreme Court's going to go with this?
Well, it's a couple of years away, probably.
Is it really? Are we going to have to wait a couple of years for this thing?
We are, and that's another reason why we haven't touched on this quite
yet. Well, that means we could have even more liberals than Kennedy in there. We could have a conservative step down by that time.
The permutations on the U.S. Supreme Court are certainly, there's a number of them, and it gets into some tea leaves reading that we want to avoid for the most part. But yeah, there could be retirements on either side of this plurality on the U.S. Supreme Court that could change the makeup. There could be changes in presidential administrations by that time, of course, if we're looking 2 years away or more. So yeah, the political aspects of this are a real concern. Here's another concern, though, is what happens in the meantime in California. Judge Walker will be deciding probably as soon as tomorrow, on Monday, whether he's going to stay his ruling issued last week or whether he's going to put into effect immediately this striking down of Proposition 8.
Gee, I can't imagine which way he's going to go on that.
Well, obviously the concern is if he does not stay his ruling, and he's indicated in the ruling itself that he thinks that it should go into effect immediately, then marriage licenses for same-sex couples start getting issued right away.
And once they're issued, they'll never be taken back, even if the thing gets overturned again.
Well, that's what we saw in 2008, right? We saw the California Supreme Court strike down Proposition 22, the predecessor to Prop 8. And so in the states, the counties, and the cities in California started issuing marriage licenses to homosexuals. They got married between June of 2008, and then in November, Prop 8 passed, and they stopped. Well, all of the 18,000 same-sex marriages that occurred during that time were allowed to continue and were upheld. So those gay marriages, even though we turned around in November 2008 and said marriage in California is now going to be defined as man and woman, all those 18,000 that occurred in the interim were allowed to exist and were not taken away. The same situation could occur now, right? We're in August now. If gay marriages start happening tomorrow and for the next 2 years between now and when the U.S. Supreme Court gets this, they continue. Even if the U.S. Supreme Court goes ahead and upholds Proposition 8 in Article 1, Section 7.5, all those may still be allowed to exist, which you have chaos at that point.
Well, either way, let's hope 2012 and a new administration comes before this goes to the Supreme Court.
Yeah, that would certainly help. And then with that and prayer are the two things we need in the interim.
James Griffiths, thank you for keeping us updated. We hope you'll come back and be on our show again.
Well, thank you for having me. It's my pleasure.
Okay, it's my pleasure, too. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show. We'll be right back.
Figured it out by now, Bob is mildly opinionated about the ultimate issues of life. But Bob also respects the opinions of others. To offer your own viewpoint or to challenge Bob with a thought-provoking question, give us a call at 1-888-344-1170. 1-888-344-1170. You can also reach Bob through Facebook, Twitter, or questions@bobsiegel.net.
Welcome back to our program. Well, that was a harrowing interview talking with attorney James Griffiths and realizing that once this goes to the Supreme Court with their 50-50 split, it's all going to be up to one swing vote and one who tends to swing more liberal than conservative on this issue. Let me just bring in my own thoughts. That's kind of new for you, me bringing in my own thoughts. You just can't imagine that, can you? Let's review this, because I think we do need to stop once in a while and take a look back. At first, the people of California passed a law stating that marriage would be defined as a union between a man and a woman. Then a court overturned the law, claiming it was unconstitutional. So later on in 2008, after 7 million people passed Proposition 8, the California Constitution was actually changed. I went on the radio at this point predicting that somebody would find the amended Constitution unconstitutional, insane as that sounds. Now, I said it in a sarcastic way. I said it in a tongue-in-cheek way, but I was also dead serious. Well, last week, that is just exactly what happened. A federal judge has found the California Constitution to be unconstitutional, that is, in serious conflict with the federal Constitution, which incidentally says that our independent states have a right to make their own constitutions. The rationale is that the state constitution violates federal rights, which must transcend all states and be true for all Americans, namely the promise of equal protection under the law. If the Supreme Court upholds this brilliant reasoning, it will have to explain why plural marriage is not also a candidate for equal protection. And what about marriage between children and adults? You think I'm exaggerating? You think I'm exaggerating? Are you aware that in the year 1994, the American Psychiatric Association declassified pedophilia as an emotional disorder, just as they had declassified homosexuality in 1973? Did you know that NAMBLA marches in gay pride parades and talks about the beauty of love between an adult and a child, just as gays talk about the suitability of love with the same gender? Did you know that some college professors are teaching that the age of consent should be substantially lowered and point to ancient but sophisticated societies that did not have hang-ups over sex between an adult and a child? Meanwhile, the will of some 7 million Californians has been traded in for the opinion of one judge. Democracy hard at work. That's 7 million opinions not being tolerated for the sake of tolerance. Well, if you'd like to weigh in on any of this, you can reach us by phone, 888-344-1170. You can reach me on Facebook. You can reach me on Twitter or questions@bobsiegel.net. This person calls himself Angry Republican. I can't even repeat all the words he said on the air because he was really angry. But let me filter it a little bit for you. He says, to all you insiders who read this, I'm just a fed-up working stiff. Maybe we Republicans should leave this state and go somewhere where we don't have to put up with this, a place with a part where a party machine that doesn't whine but actually protects us. Now, this was put up on the blog version of my monologue, and so another comment was right next to this, responding to Angry Republican. This person calls himself or herself Believe in California. Believe in California says to Angry Republican, our own elected California State Supreme Court upheld Proposition 8, 6-1 vote, I believe, last year. So don't give up on the Golden State just yet. This was one kooky federal judge today who, according to the San Francisco Chronicle, is gay and is now an instant hero in the Bay Area. Enjoy your 15 minutes of fame, loser. When this gets to the Supreme Court, Proposition 8 will be declared valid. Well, I hope that's true with all of my heart. I'm not quite as hopeful. When I think about the fact that we can pray, I'm more hopeful. Anyway, this person says, so hang in there for the long fight ahead, and let's elect a president in 2012 who will appoint more judges like Scalia, Roberts, and Thomas to protect our society from these zealots. Nina says, Bob, a wonderful piece that makes perfect sense. You beautifully point out the ludicrousy of this whole circus show of smoke and mirrors. Will the federal court system wake up and make a right judgment? I sure hope so. That would be tremendously refreshing for a change. Adam says, thanks for making the obvious obvious. Well, that's what I do, Adam. That's what I try to do. He says, a little too obvious for some, which goes right over their thick skulls. Ah! Anyway, I'm in shock. No, I'm sick to my stomach that votes seem to be obsolete these days. Minority over majority seems to be the tail that wags the dog. Bunch of bull. We just can't be silent, and you're doing a great job in that arena. Be encouraged. Well, thank you, my friend. That was very encouraging. Not quite as encouraging, though, is Mayor Bloomberg of New York City. Bloomberg was recently reminded that the imam slated to head the approved Ground Zero mosque is Imam Faisal Abdurrauf, who has gone on record to claim that the September 11th attack was not the work of Muslims. gee, I had no idea. I'm so glad when Muslims explained to us what they did and didn't do, because I never would have known. Certainly Al-Qaeda came out and took full responsibility and bragged about it and took credit for it, and so did Osama bin Laden, but what do they know? They were just the Muslims who ordered the attack. Anyway, Abdurrauf says no, it was not the work of Muslims. Indeed, he explained to CNN that the United States was an accessory to the crime and that Osama bin Laden was made in the United States. Yeah, I think they made him on the same assembly as Barbie and Ken dolls. He was, yeah, he was made in the United States. Rauf is also unwilling to call Hamas a terrorist organization, and he gave a wonderful reason. You see, the whole phenomena of terrorism is complicated. Yes, it's especially complicated when imams are connected to the terrorists and they get caught and they have to explain, it's complicated. Bloomberg's response? He says it is not his place to interfere with what is being taught inside a mosque since it falls under the heading of religious freedom. Religious freedom. I wonder if Bloomberg would have justified slavery in the South because certain churches taught that slavery was okay. Now, if you've been listening to this show all these years, you know I'm a very strong champion of religious rights. But let me, as one who is a champion of religious rights, go on record to say that not everything is covered under freedom of religion. Rauf's comments are political, dangerous, and seditious. They are not merely religious. Bloomberg also delivered a patronizing speech. He said, of course it is fair to ask the organizers of the mosque to show some special sensitivity to the situation, and in fact, their plan envisions reaching beyond their walls and building an interfaith community. But doing so, it is my hope that the mosque will help to bring our city even closer together and help repudiate the false and repugnant idea that the attacks of 9/11 were in any ways consistent with Islam. Those are the words of Mayor Bloomberg. Mayor, what color is the sky in your world? The 9/11 attacks were 100% consistent with Islam, and this is apparent to anybody who has read the Quran or studied the history of a religion which builds shrines on the sites of military victory. As you pat yourself on the back for being such a sensitive, politically correct man, do you have any idea how self-righteous, condescending, and embarrassing you sound? The Muslim terrorists hold a warm place in their hearts for people like you. The conventional phrase, and I didn't make this up, is useful idiot. Speaking of a useful person, in a recent interview for CNN, John Kerry showed a stroke of genius. Are you ready? Are you ready? He blamed our bad economy on George W. Bush. Wow. That Kerry sure knows how to speak with originality. What a novel idea. Nobody had ever thought of this before. The bad economy was inherited. It is not Obama's problem. Indeed, Kerry was actually responding to recent polls which say that Americans are getting tired of the George Bush wild card. Hold on to your seats. People are starting to blame our current problems on our current president. Where do these nutty ideas come from? Kerry expressed support for Obama with great sympathy, claiming the man was being held accountable for things which simply were not his fault. Yes, he must be right. I think we should all cut Obama a break. After all, the guy has only been president now for 19 months. Just 19 months! That's not a very long time when you consider that had people waited a little longer and held back their criticism, they could have instead evaluated him at 20 months. Besides, the poor man gets every single one of his bills passed through his Democratic Congress without the support of Republicans. How was he to know that his trillion-dollar debt-related spending would put us in even more debt? If those mean and nasty Republicans had a shred of decency, they'd vote with the Democrats so that they could be equally blamed. You see, this would promote bipartisanship. Poor Obama. All he's trying to do is destroy our capitalist system and replace it with a socialist system. Who could have predicted that this would kill our economy? Darn that George Bush. He's done it again. Now I'm really mad. Well, speaking of trying to fix our economy, so you think those stimulus bills were a waste of time? Well, that just means you can't handle a black president and his compassionate, fiscally wise Congress. I'm about to read a sampling of these economy booster shots courtesy of the Washington Examiner. Now, my own commentary will follow each description. Take a gander. $2 million earmarked for swine odor research in Iowa. Yes, you heard me correctly. Swine odor research in Iowa. I think we already knew that pigs stink. I'm not sure if anyone cares why. I do care that $2 million was spent on this pork. Here's another one. $300,000 for a GPS-equipped helicopter to hunt for radioactive rabbit droppings at the Hanford Nuclear Reservation in Washington State. Now, who other than Elmer Fudd could possibly care about this? The Wiley Waskely Wabbit Droppings. $11 million for Microsoft to build a bridge connecting its two headquarter campuses in Redmond, Washington, which are separated by a highway. Yeah, can you just feel our economy recovering? $430,000 to repair a bridge in Iowa County, Wisconsin. Now, you're going to like this. That bridge carries 10 or fewer cars a day. 10 or fewer cars a day. In all fairness, maybe they're hoping a Mercedes will be one of those cars and it'll carry across the bridge a rich man into town to start a new business. Yeah, sure. That must have been it. How about this? $800,000 for the John Murtha Airport in Johnstown, Pennsylvania, which serves about 20 passengers per day, and they want to build a backup runway. Yeah, I guess you need a backup runway if you have 20 passengers a day. Are you trying to figure out how this one helps our economy? Don't think, son. It hurts the team. $219,000 for Syracuse University to study the sex lives of freshman women. $219,000 to study the sex lives of freshman women. Call me a romantic. Call me a romantic, but aren't there already enough freshman males who will volunteer to conduct this study for free? $2.3 million for the United States Forest Service to rear large numbers of arthropods, including the Asian long-horned beetle and the nun moth. I would find it easier to believe that the long-horned beetle and the nun moth are running both houses of Congress these days. $3.4 million for a 13-foot tunnel for turtles. Turtles and other wildlife attempting to cross U.S. Highway 27 in Lake Jackson, Florida. Well, that ends the discussion as far as I'm concerned about whether or not America is a discriminating country. Just ask the Grateful Turtles. That almost sounds like a singing group. The Grateful Turtles. Ask these turtles who were hoping they wouldn't need an alternate route around U.S. 27. $1.15 million to install a guardrail for a persistently dry lake bed in Gunyon, Oklahoma. Okay, we admit on the surface, this one looks a little strange. But remember, if it ever rains and fills up that lake again, these guys are going to be ready. And who knows? Maybe that responsible guardrail will impress God so much he'll send them some rain. $9.38 million to renovate a century-old train depot in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, that has not been used for 3 decades. Any objections, you party of no Republicans? Not used for 3 decades, you say? Well, yeah, sure, if you're going to bring that one up. $2.5 million in stimulus checks sent to the deceased. Now, that has to be the greatest all-time example of money well spent. $6 million for a snow-making facility in Duluth, Minnesota. Am I crazy? Doesn't it already snow 6 months out of the year in Minnesota? $173,834 to weatherize 8 pickup trucks in Madison County, Illinois. Yeah, I just lose sleep over pickup trucks being weatherized. $20,000 for a fish sperm freezer at the Gavin's Point National Fish Hatchery in South Dakota. I hope they pay careful attention to this one. I wouldn't want it to accidentally become a banquet frozen dinner. $1.5 million for a fence to block would-be jumpers from leaping off the All-American Bridge in Akron, Ohio. Given the choice between paying the $1.5 million or just letting them jump, never mind. $356,000 for Indiana University to study childhood comprehension of foreign accents compared with native speech. I'll save you the money. It sounds to the kids like somebody is speaking with an accent. $3.1 million to transform a canal barge into a floating museum that will travel the Erie Canal in New York State. In all fairness, the last time I visited a museum, I was quite upset that it didn't float. And the granddaddy of them all, $300 apiece for thousands of signs at road construction sites across the country announcing that the projects are funded by stimulus money. As you can see, our Congress could give a flying leap about fixing our economy. Instead, they are interested in opening up a grab bag of favors for the lobbyist groups that keep them in power. We, the people, of course, are supposed to be too stupid to notice. They'll find out how stupid we are in November. How about $4 million to study the emotional adjustment of new vocations for ex-senators and congressmen? Last week, I started a study on forgiveness. I did not conclude it this week, as I promised I would, so gives you a chance to forgive me. You can practice what I said. And look, since it's going to take you another week to learn how to forgive, just think of all those people you can't stand, and you get to go a whole week without forgiving them now, so you're really getting a lot out of this. We will continue the discussion on forgiveness next week.
KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.